Oh, she said, I'll see you next week at the theater. And she disappeared into the crowded train station. Etienne said, Well, it was nice to meet you, Hugo. And he wandered off to find the book he had come in looking for. Hugo headed toward the door to leave, but the bookstore was warm and quiet, and the teetering piles of books fascinated him. He decided to look around for just a minute. After exploring the entire store, Hugo held the book that had caught his eye. There were golden cards embossed on the cover, as well as the title, Practical Manual of Card Magic and Illusions. Inside, clear black and white diagrams revealed what seemed like an endless array of card tricks, many of which Hugo had seen the old man do. The second half of the book showed the secrets of how to make things disappear, and how to throw your voice and pull rabbits from hats. More diagrams showed how to tear paper and have it reassemble itself, and how to pour water into a shoe and leave the shoe dry. Hugo continued flipping through the book, seeing if there was anything at all about automata, but the book was silent on the subject. Still, Hugo wanted it very much. He knew that Monsieur Labisse lent books to Isabel, but Hugo didn't want to just borrow this one. He wanted to own it. He slipped it under his arm and inched toward the door. He rubbed the remaining buttons on his jacket. Hey, Hugo, called Etienne, who was sitting on a stool reading. What do you have there? Hugo grew agitated. He wanted to run, but Etienne approached him and took the book from under his arm. Hmm, magic. Etienne smiled and handed back the book. Do you know what's under my eye patch? Was Hugo really supposed to answer that question? It seemed that Etienne was waiting for an answer. Hesitantly, Hugo said, Your eye? No, I lost my eye when I was a kid playing with fireworks. A Portuguese rocket flew into it. Hugo thought about his father's favorite movie and wondered briefly if the man in the moon had to wear an eye patch after the rocket flew into his eye. But all Hugo could think to say was, Oh. So, do you want to know what's under my eye patch then? Okay, said Hugo, thinking that what he really wanted to do was to get out of there. Etienne reached beneath the eye patch and pulled out a coin, which he handed to Hugo. That's the only magic trick I know, said Etienne. Go buy the book. Chapter 9. The Key. That night, after all the clocks had been inspected and cleaned, Hugo opened the magic book. He read it from cover to cover, then reread his favorite parts, memorizing whole sections, practicing with whatever he could find around his room. But even as he fanned out his cards or rolled a coin across the backs of his fingers, he found himself thinking about Isabel. Hugo finally put the book down. She said she would try to help him get his notebook back. Isabel had called him her friend. But how could he be her friend when he had so many secrets? He didn't have any secrets to keep when he was friends with Antoine and Louis. He wished that Isabel would just go away. Before he got ready for bed, Hugo took out the mechanical man and looked through all the little parts he'd stolen since he started working at the booth. Suddenly, it was as if a light went on in his head. Hugo saw how, with just a little work, one of the pieces would fit into the man's arm socket. He pulled out his toolkit and cut and filed the metal, bending it until it finally snapped neatly into place. For the first time, Hugo had fixed something on the mechanical man without guidance from the notebook. His heart beat hard. What if he could fix the mechanical man without using the notebook? After all, who knew how long the old man was going to make him work? And what if the girl was still lying and the notebook really was burned? He wasn't sure he could do it. But until the notebook was actually in his hands, he would try. The week passed quickly. Hugo was more tired than ever. He hardly got any sleep because at the end of the day, after taking care of the clocks and working at the booth, he would stay up until dawn working on the automaton. He made much progress, and he knew that he was getting very close to finishing. When the time came to meet Isabelle and Etienne at the theater, he didn't want to break his promise, so he made excuses to the old man, left the station, and ran to the cinema. He snuck around back where he found Isabelle waiting for him. "Papa George must have hidden your notebook really well," she said, "but I think I might have an idea where it is." Hugo wondered if he should remind her not to look inside it. He decided not to. "Why doesn't he want you to go to the movies?" Hugo asked. "I don't know. Maybe he thinks it's a waste of time. He's never said why. I bet my parents would have let me go to the movies." Isabelle looked at Hugo as if she was hoping he'd ask her a question about her parents, but he didn't, so she just kept talking. "My parents died when I was a baby," said Isabelle, "and Papa George and Mama Jean were my godparents, so they took me in and raised me. They are very nice, except when it comes to the movies." Hugo said nothing in response, so finally Isabelle said, "I wonder where Etienne is. He usually opens the door for me by now." Hugo cautiously slipped around to the front of the theater and looked for Etienne. The manager of the theater, whose thin black hair was slicked across the top of his head, opened the door and said to Hugo, "What do you want?" The cigarette that dangled from his lips moved up and down as he spoke.
I'm looking for Etienne."
The man stared at him.
"He has an eye patch," said Hugo.
"I know who Etienne is," said the man as he smoothed his hair across his head and flicked his ashes toward Hugo. "I just fired him. We discovered that he was sneaking children into the theater. Isn't that a terrible thing to do?"
He glared at Hugo. Hugo backed away from the door, ran behind the theater, and told Isabelle what had happened.
"What an awful man. Follow me," Isabelle said.
She walked to the rear door and took out a bobby pin from her pocket. Hugo watched as she fiddled with the pin inside the lock until it clicked and the door opened.
"How did you learn to do that?" asked Hugo.
"Books," answered Isabelle.
Isabelle poked her head inside to make sure no one was watching, then she held the door open for Hugo. They entered the back of the lobby, where photographs from upcoming films were tacked to a display case. Isabelle stopped for a moment and looked at one of the pictures, a black-and-white photograph of an actress with very dark eyes.
"Sometimes I think I like these photos as much as I like the movies," she said. "You can make up your own story when you look at a photo."
Hugo looked at the picture, but then Isabelle said,
"Quick, the manager is coming."
She and Hugo hurried from the lobby into the theater, sank down into the soft red velvet seats in the back row, and waited for the movie to start. The blank white screen reminded Hugo of a brand new piece of paper, and he loved the wonderful whirring sound from the projector that filled the theater. First came the newsreels, each one a few minutes long, about current events around the world. There was one about the Depression in America, one about a World's Fair that would be opening in Paris in a few months. Hugo thought that sounded exciting, although he knew he'd never be able to go, and one about politics in Germany. And then, finally, a cartoon began. It was called The Clock Store. In it, an old man was lighting street lamps as night fell, and he passed a clock store. Inside, all the clocks were alive, and they were dancing to classical music. Hugo knew his father would have loved it. In the end, the music grew wilder as two alarm clocks had a fight. The curtains closed, everyone applauded, and the projectionist changed the reels. After a few moments, the curtains opened again and the main feature began, The Million, by a director named René Clair. It was about an artist, a lost lottery ticket, a criminal, a borrowed coat, and an opera singer, and it had one of the most amazing chase sequences that Hugo could ever imagine. He thought every good story should end with a big, exciting chase. Time passed quickly in the darkness, and as the lights came up, Hugo didn't want the afternoon to end.
He and Isabel looked at each other, their eyes still shining from the flickering images. Everyone filed out of the theater until the children were alone in their seats in the back of the room. Hugo stared at the screen as if he was still seeing the projected light, still hearing the sound. Suddenly, Hugo and Isabel were grabbed by their collars and hoisted to their feet.
"How did you two rats get in here?" the manager barked.
Cigarette ashes fell on their heads. The children managed to take their coats and were dumped outside on the wet sidewalk in front of the theater.
"And I better not see you here again."
The manager closed the glass doors, wiped his hands, and glared at them until they ran away, brushing ash from their hair. Once they were out of sight of the theater, they slowed to a walk. The air was cold, and they shivered. Isabel told Hugo about other movies she loved, comedies and cartoons and cowboy movies starring someone named Tom Mix. There was an actress she'd seen named Louise Brooks who had a haircut that Isabel had copied. There were adventure stories and mysteries and love stories and fantasies. She said names like Charlie Chaplin, Jean Renoir, and Buster Keaton. Hugo had seen a few Buster Keaton movies and two Charlie Chaplin movies, but for some reason, he didn't share this with Isabel. He just listened. Soon they arrived back at the station. As they entered the waiting room, Hugo noticed someone standing very still, looking up at the main clock, taking notes on a clipboard. It was the station inspector. Hugo grabbed Isabel and ducked behind a bench nearby. He rubbed the buttons on his coat.
"What are you doing?"
Isabel said, straightening herself up. But Hugo was lost in thought. Had the station inspector begun investigating and found out that Hugo's uncle was gone? Hugo couldn't be taken away now, not when he was so close to finishing The Mechanical Man. He knew he shouldn't have gone to the movies. He never should have left the station. Hugo's heart raced. He had to get into the walls to check the clocks, but Isabel was still talking. He hadn't heard anything she had said for the last few minutes. When he thought it was safe, he got up and started walking in the opposite direction from the station inspector.
"Answer me, Hugo," she said as she caught onto his arm. "Don't just run away." "I've got to go." "That's what I mean, go where? I was asking you where you lived."
Hugo stopped short and stared at her.
"I don't know anything about you," she said. "You know where I live. You know about my parents. If we're going to be friends, then I think I should know about you. Why won't you tell me?"
Suddenly, Hugo started to run.
"Hugo," she yelled, "stop! Wait for me!" Oh!
Hugo helped Isabel to her feet, but he couldn't stop staring at the key on the chain around her neck. Isabel noticed and tucked it back into her dress.
"Where did you get that?" Hugo whispered. "Tell me where you live."
Neither of them said a word. Without warning, Isabel started running again, and this time Hugo chased her. Finally, she stopped at a cafe table and sat down out of breath. Hugo sat down too. One of the train station pigeons walked up to their table and pecked at some crumbs on the floor.
"Why are you so interested in my key?"
Isabel demanded.
"Tell me where you got it."
A steam engine whistled its deafening shriek, which completely drowned out all the other sounds of the station for a moment and made Hugo jump as it always did. Hugo and Isabel stared at each other until the owner of the cafe made them get up and leave. They parted without saying goodbye. Chapter 10. The Notebook. The next day, Hugo was late getting to the toy booth. He ran his fingers through his dirty, disheveled hair and rubbed his eyes. The old man looked up as he approached, put down his cards, and marched toward him. Hugo noticed that the old man's face was red. He came at Hugo like a steam engine, seizing the boy by the arm.
"Give it to me," the old man whispered fiercely.
"What?"
asked Hugo in shock.
"How dare you break into my house?
What are you talking about? Asked Hugo.
Where is it? Where is the notebook?
Said the old man.
How did you get into my house? How stupid can you be? I was going to return the notebook to you, but what did you do after I took you in and gave you a chance? You repaid me with more theft, more lies. I watched you pocketing small mechanisms, yet I didn't stop you. You kept the booth clean and were good at fixing the toys. You were helpful. My God, I even liked your company. But then you break into my house? I'm shocked you would even dare to show your face here again. You are nothing but a disappointment.
The old man started coughing. He covered his mouth and pointed for the boy to leave. At that moment, Hugo saw Isabel over the old man's shoulder as she rose up from behind the counter. She stepped in front of the booth and raised one of her hands slightly. She was holding the notebook. Hugo said to the old man,
"Let me say goodbye to Isabel at least."
Isabel hid the notebook behind her back. The old man wiped his lips and said,
"No, now go away."
But Hugo ran to Isabel.
"I told you it wasn't burned," she whispered. "What are those drawings? I told you not to look. Now give it to me." "No."
She put the notebook into her pocket and kept her hand over it. Hugo looked behind him. The old man was storming toward him. Without warning, Hugo wrapped his arms around Isabel's neck and gave her a big hug. He could tell she was surprised.
"Let go of her,"
the old man said as he reached for Hugo's shoulder. Hugo let go and dodged the old man's grip. Then he ran down the hallway without looking back. Chapter 11. Stolen Goods. Hugo darted through the crowd, his vision blurry from tears, and made his way into the walls of the station. He hurried to his room, shut the door behind him, and lit some candles. Anxiously, he headed for the boxes that were piled near the wall and pulled out the mechanical man. Hugo had indeed been busy in the last week. He had finally repaired all of the mechanical man's broken pieces and painstakingly loosened what was too rusty to move. He sewed it a new outfit and oiled and polished its mechanisms. The mechanical man was finally holding a brand new handmade pen with a specially cut metal nib. Hugo moved a candle closer to him. In the middle of the mechanical man's back was a heart-shaped hole outlined in silver. Since leaving the toy booth moments ago, Hugo's right hand had been clenched into a tight fist, which now he slowly opened like a flower. Hugo glanced over at the book that was sitting by his bed, Practical Manual of Card Magic and Illusions. He had been studying the book very closely and learned how to do just about every magic trick it talked about. He found that he was quite good at them. With the proper instruction, his talent for machines translated perfectly to magic tricks. Hugo had come to understand the connection between horology and magic that his father had talked about. It wasn't just the understanding of machinery. It was the dexterity, the talent within his fingers themselves, as if they automatically knew what to do. Hugo's fingers were capable of the most surprising things. He had discovered that he could make cards float, and he could turn marbles into mice, and he could rip up a piece of paper and make it whole again. But most important, he found that with a hug goodbye, he could make Isabel's necklace disappear without her feeling a thing. Chapter 12. The Message. Hugo's hands were shaking. He had managed to finish fixing the mechanical man. The only thing he had needed was the key. The original key had been lost in the fire, and all the other keys he found around the station and in the wind-up toys from the booth didn't fit. But when he saw the key around Isabel's neck, he knew right away it would work. And now he had it. He put the key in the heart-shaped hole in the middle of the mechanical man's back
He had been right. It fit perfectly.
Hugo's mind raced. At last, the time had come for him to get the message he had been waiting for. But just as Hugo began to turn the key, he heard his door rattle. Before he could cover the mechanical man, the door burst open. Hugo didn't have time to scream as a dark figure lunged at him, knocked him to the ground, and landed on top of him. His head banged painfully against the floorboards.
"You stole my key! What are you doing here? You aren't supposed to be here," Hugo yelled. "Why would you steal my key after I helped you? I got your notebook for you. I was going to give it to you. I just wanted you to promise to tell me about it. I should burn your notebook myself."
"Get out of here," Hugo hissed into Isabel's face. "You're ruining everything. Get off me."
Using all his strength, he pushed her off and forced her toward the door, trying to get her out. But Isabel fought back. Soon she had pushed Hugo back down to the floor and was using her knees to keep him there. He yelped in pain, and she grabbed his wrists and pinned his arms to the floor. They were both breathing heavily.
"What is this place?" she said. "Who are you?"
The candlelight was reflected brightly in her fierce black eyes.
"It's a secret. I can't tell you anything." "It's not a secret anymore. I'm here. Now tell me what this place is."
She jabbed him with her knees, which hurt.
"This is where I live," Hugo spat back at her.
Isabel didn't budge.
"Isn't that what you wanted to know? Well, now you know."
Quietly, Isabel said,
"Why should I believe you? You're a liar and a thief. Where is my key?"
In the candlelight, Isabel hadn't yet seen the mechanical man sitting nearby. Hugo struggled beneath her, but it was no use. Isabel looked around for the first time. Finally, she saw it. She slipped off Hugo so she could get closer to the automaton, but she kept hold of one of Hugo's wrists.
"That's what was drawn in your notebook."
She looked back to Hugo.
"What's going on?"
The imaginary gears in Hugo's head began to turn.
"My father made it before he died," Hugo lied. "Why would my key fit into your father's machine? That doesn't make any sense."
Hugo hadn't thought of that.
"I don't know," he said. "I just knew your key would fit when I saw it."
"So you stole it," said Isabel.
"I didn't know how else to get it," Hugo said.
"You could have asked."
Isabel wiped her hair away from her face with her one free hand.
"What happens when you wind it up?" she asked.
"I don't know. I've never had the key before."
"Well, don't just sit there," she said to him. "Turn it."
"No," said Hugo.
"What do you mean, no?"
I want to be by myself when I turn it."
Isabel looked at Hugo. She was clearly still angry. Letting go of his wrist, she pushed him back, grasped the end of the key, and turned it several times herself. Hugo yelled out, but it was too late.
"It needs ink," he said.
He quickly opened a bottle nearby and put a few drops in the tiny bottle in the automaton's hand. The children watched as the clockwork gears and levers inside the man began to engage. They whirred and turned and spun. Hugo's heart raced. He didn't care anymore that Isabel was sitting next to him. It didn't matter at all. The only thing that mattered now was the message. A cascade of perfect movements, with hundreds of brilliantly calibrated actions, coursed through the mechanical man. The key tightened a spring connected to a series of gears that extended down into the base of the figure. There, the last gear turned a series of brass discs with precisely cut edges. Two little hammer-like contraptions came down and trailed along the edges of the notched discs, rising and falling as the discs steadily turned. The actions set in motion by the little hammers were then translated back up through a series of rods that led into the man's torso. There, the moving rods silently turned other mechanisms in the shoulder and the neck. The shoulder affected the elbow, and as the elbow engaged, it sent other movements in a chain reaction down into the wrist and finally, the hand. Hugo and Isabel watched, wide-eyed in wonder, as very cautiously, the man's miniature hand began to move. Isabel and Hugo held their breath. The mechanical man dipped the pen into the ink and began to write. The children tried desperately to read it, but there were no letters, no words, no sentences, just random disconnected markings. The mechanical man wasn't writing anything. Hugo almost took the pen out of its hand because he was so upset. The automaton was not fixed. There must have been something Hugo had missed. He had failed.
"Give me my notebook," Hugo said fiercely to Isabel.
Isabel, startled by his intensity, reached into her pocket and handed it to him. He quickly grabbed the notebook out of her hands and did what he had wanted to do for a long time. Feverishly, he checked his work against his father's drawings. He had done everything right. It should be working. Suddenly, Hugo felt stupid for thinking he could fix it, and especially for imagining there would be a letter from his father waiting for him. All his work had been for nothing. Hugo felt broken himself. He stalked off to a dark corner of the room, put the notebook down on a shelf, and buried his head in his hands. But the mechanical man didn't stop what it was doing. It kept dipping the pen into the ink and making more scratches on the paper. Isabel stayed where she was, watching as these markings accumulated on the page one after the other. The mechanical man's movements were so lifelike that its head even turned toward the inkwell as it dipped the pen for more ink. And then, something incredible happened. Isabel gasped. Hugo turned to look at her and then ran over. He saw it immediately. The mechanical man hadn't just been scribbling. The lines were all coming together, like something in the distance moving into focus. The mechanical man hadn't been writing. It was drawing. It created an image that Hugo recognized immediately. Shivers ran down his spine. That brings us to the end of the story. Now you know how the mysterious drawing I mentioned at the beginning came to be discovered. It had been hidden inside the clockworks of a well-loved machine, waiting to be released by the turn of a stolen key. Here, the curtains close, and we can fade to black. But another story begins, because stories lead to other stories, and this one leads all the way to the moon. Part 2. Chapter 1. The Signature. Hugo sat trembling beside the mechanical man. Of course he recognized the drawing. It was the scene his father had described from his favorite childhood movie, The Rocket in the Eye of the Man in the Moon. So Hugo had been right. The message was from his father, but what did it mean? That's when the children realized that the mechanical man wasn't finished. It seemed to have stopped mid-line, as if it was pausing. Hugo watched as one more time the mechanical man dipped its pen into the ink. Then it moved its hand into position and signed a name. George Méliès.
"That's Papa George's name," said Isabel.
She looked completely confused.
"Why did your father's machine sign Papa George's name?"
She looked at Hugo in wonder, but then her expression changed, and she glared at him.
"You lied to me! This isn't your father's machine!"
Hugo stared blankly ahead. This didn't make any sense at all.
"Are you listening to me, Hugo? This is not your father's."
Hugo looked up at her and wiped his eyes.
"Yes, it is," he said quietly.
"Then why did it sign Papa George's name? Why did my key fit into it?"
I don't know, he answered.
You are a liar, yelled Isabel. You stole this machine from somewhere. You stole it from Papa George. The notebook probably isn't even yours. You must have stolen that, too.
I didn't steal it, liar, said Isabel. It was my father's notebook. He drew it.
I don't believe anything you say, Hugo.
Isabel took her key from the mechanical man's back, put the necklace from which it dangled back around her neck, and grabbed the drawing from the little desk.
What are you doing?
Hugo said as he took hold of the paper in Isabel's hand.
Give that to me. It has my godfather's name on it. It's mine.
The two of them struggled for the drawing, and it ripped completely in half. After a moment of stunned silence, Isabel took her half, got up, and started walking toward the door. Hugo quickly pocketed his half of the drawing and chased after Isabel, leaving the mechanical man in the middle of the room.
Where are you going? Hugo yelled. I'm going to ask Mama Jean what's going on. Stop following me.
The children ran through the train station. It was late at night and the building was quiet. There was still a little time before the old man left the toy booth, so Isabel hurried home as fast as she could.
Go away, Hugo Cabret, she called to him,
but he was right on her heels. Hugo knew he should have put the mechanical man back into its hiding place, and he should be checking the clocks, but there wasn't time now. As he followed Isabel out the door, he prayed the station inspector had gone home for the night. The children ran down the dark streets of the neighborhood and through the graveyard toward Isabel's apartment. Hugo called after her.
Where did you get the key? Tell me that at least.
No, said Isabel.
Did you find it? Was it a gift from someone?
Hugo caught up with her and grabbed her shoulder, spinning her around to face him. They locked eyes.
Leave me alone.
Isabel opened the door to her apartment building and pushed Hugo away. He grabbed for the edge of the door with one hand, trying to keep it open.
Let go, she said.
She pulled as hard as she could and slammed the door, crushing Hugo's fingers. Hugo heard an awful crunch and he screamed in pain. Isabel screamed too and opened the door.
What's going on down there?
Shouted Isabel's godmother from the top of the steps.
You should have moved your hand,
whispered Isabel.
Isabel, what's going on? Who's with you?
Isabel tried to push Hugo away, but seeing him cradling his hand under his arm, she shook her head and let him come upstairs. Tears were streaming down his face, even though he didn't want to be crying. Isabel slipped off her shoes before she went into the apartment, and she helped Hugo do the same.
No shoes in the apartment, she whispered, and don't mention the mechanical man or the key, she added. I'll ask her later by myself.
Isabel's godmother clutched a silver brooch at her neck and said, Who is this?
His name is Hugo, Mama Jean.
The boy who's been working for Papa George? The one who stole from him?
He caught his fingers in the door downstairs.
What is he doing here?
But before Isabel could answer, the old woman led Hugo to the bedroom.
Come here, let me see this in the light, she said.
She moved the socks she'd been darning and set him down on a chair near the large wooden armoire underneath the lamp. She took his hand and tried to straighten his fingers. Again, Hugo screamed in pain.
You've hurt yourself pretty badly, young man.
She disappeared for a few moments and came back with some chips of ice wrapped in a cloth napkin, which she handed to Hugo.
Here, hold this on your fingers.
Then she turned to Isabel.
I thought you were coming home tonight with Papa George.
Hugo was still angry that Isabel hadn't told her godfather she had stolen the notebook herself. And considering what she had done to his hand, he thought she should at least tell her godmother. But all Isabel did was look at him. Hugo winced in pain as he balanced the ice on his bruised fingers, which were resting on his lap. With his good hand, he removed his half of the drawing from his pocket and said,
We have something we want to ask you.
Not now, Hugo, I said not now,
yelled Isabel. She tried to snatch the drawing away from her godmother, but it was too late. The old woman had already taken it.
Where did you get this?
She asked in a stunned whisper.
Give her the other half of the drawing, Isabel,
said Hugo. Reluctantly, Isabel reached into her pocket. She took out her half of the drawing. Holding the two halves, Isabel's godmother looked from the paper to the children.
A mechanical man drew it, said Hugo.
That's not possible. I don't understand, said the old woman, her eyes filling with tears.
I have the mechanical man, said Hugo. You stole it, you mean, said Isabel.
You have the mechanical man, but that can't be.
I found it.
What do you mean you found it?
Isabel's godmother asked.
I found it after the fire in the museum, said Hugo. I fixed it with pieces from your husband's toy booth, and I wound it up using Isabel's key.
What key?
Isabel's face turned white.
What key, Isabel?
Slowly, Isabel reached into the neck of her dress and pulled out the key on its chain.
My key, cried her godmother. I thought I'd lost it.
Tears formed in Isabel's eyes.
I'm sorry,
You stole it?
Said Hugo, shocked.
It's the only thing I've ever taken. I swear, I just thought it was pretty,
Isabel said to her godmother.
Please don't be mad at me. I thought you wouldn't miss it. Oh, heavens.
The old woman brushed her hair from her face.
I'm surrounded by thieves.
She collected herself, wiped her tears, and put down the two halves of the drawing. Hugo quickly snatched them up. A change came over the old woman as she straightened her dress and said,
Take that drawing away. We can't dredge up the past now. And whatever happens, don't let Papa George see it. And put the key back in your dress, Isabel. You need to take good care of it.
She wiped her eyes again. Isabel smiled slightly and tucked the key back into her dress.
Please tell us what's going on, said Hugo.
No. The only thing I'll say is that I need to protect my husband, and the best way for me to do that is to just forget about all this. Trust me, we must never speak of this again.
Chapter 2. The Armoire. From the bedroom where they sat, they heard the apartment door open. The old man coughed a few times as he entered. The old woman whispered to Hugo,
He can't know you're here. Just keep quiet, let him eat his dinner in peace, and then I'll divert him to the bathroom and you can sneak out. Now I don't want to hear a noise out of either of you.
Her eyes quickly glanced toward the armoire. It was a brief look, but Hugo and Isabel had both seen her do it. She left the bedroom and closed the door behind her. Hugo and Isabel sat staring at each other for a few moments, and then Hugo whispered,
She looked over at the armoire. There must be something in it.
I already searched it when I was looking for the notebook, Isabel said. There's nothing.
Search it again, said Hugo.
Don't tell me what to do, said Isabel, but after thinking about it, she pulled another bobby pin from her pocket.
Within moments, she had unlocked the doors. She looked again through the hanging coats and through the folded sheets and the clothes on the lower shelves. She took the chair Hugo had been sitting on, stood on it, and checked the top shelves, but still found nothing. As Hugo looked up at her, he noticed something odd. There was a decorative panel at the top of the armoire, which had two thin parallel cracks in it. He pointed them out to Isabel. She reached up and knocked on the wood. It sounded hollow. Still standing on the chair, she was able to get a grip on the wooden molding, and she pulled until the panel had come off in her hands, revealing an old wooden box. Isabel shrieked and lost hold of the box. She landed on the floor, and the box landed on her foot and smashed to bits. She screamed again. The contents of the box flew everywhere. Hundreds of pieces of paper of every shape and size scattered across the floor. Hugo saw that they were all covered with drawings. Also inside the box was what appeared to be a very thin old blanket,
covered with images of stars and moons. It was frayed and dusty. Within moments, the bedroom door flew open.
"Isabel!"
yelled her godmother as she ran to the girl. The old man stood frozen in the doorway. He was staring at the drawings.
"Why would you do this, children? Why?"
wailed the old woman.
"Hugo, gather up these drawings and lock them in the armoire."
She handed him a key from her pocket.
"Come now, quick! And Isabel, you come with me. George, go back out to the kitchen."
Hugo pocketed the key and picked up the papers. He held them in his good hand as if they were diamonds and rubies. Some were on single sheets of paper, some hand-bound into little books. The edges of the drawings were yellowed and brittle, but they were all beautiful, and they were all by George Méliès.
"No,"
the old man whispered to himself.
"No, no, 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 no."
His voice got louder with each word, and he began to cough.
"What is going on here? Where did these drawings come from?"
He covered his eyes with his hands.
"Who did those drawings? Who is playing this trick on me?"
"Leave the room, George,"
cried the old woman who was trying to help Isabel stand. The old man then ran toward the drawings and grabbed handfuls of them, tearing them apart. The children instinctively threw themselves onto his arms, separating him from the papers. Hugo's hand was in terrible pain, and Isabel's foot felt like it was broken, but they tried desperately to keep the old man from destroying his drawings.
"Stop it, George! Stop!"
yelled his wife.
"This is your work!"
"Ha!" he cried. "How could this be mine? I am not an artist. I am nothing. I am a penniless merchant, a prisoner, a shell, a wind-up toy."
While the old man was distracted by his wife, Hugo and Isabel quickly gathered up all the drawings. They shoved them into the armoire and locked it. The old man was now bent over the side of the bed, his face buried in his hands, weeping. He was muttering the word "no" over and over again, and then he whispered,
"An empty box, a dry ocean, a lost monster, nothing, nothing, nothing."
He continued to mutter and sob, and the children slowly backed away from him. The old woman put her arm around her husband and helped him get into bed. She rested his head on the pillow and pulled the covers up to his chin. With tears running down her cheeks, she ran her hand softly along his rough white chin until his breathing had evened out and he was asleep.
"I'm sorry, George,"
she said, and kissed his cheek and turned out the light. She sat next to the bed, holding her husband's hand.
"I'm so sorry."
Chapter 3. The Plan. Hugo had helped Isabel hobble out of the bedroom, and now they sat shaking at the kitchen table. He got some ice for her foot, and the two of them remained silent, trying to nurse their wounds. Eventually, Isabel's godmother came out of the bedroom.
"Are those really Papa George's drawings? Why didn't I ever know he was an artist?"
"Quiet, Isabel. Just tell me how your foot feels."
"It hurts."
"And your hand, Hugo?"
He shrugged.
"My house has suddenly turned into a hospital ward."
The old woman shook her head and tried to laugh, but she sat down at the table with them and began to cry.
"What's going on?" asked Isabel. "Why were those drawings hidden in the armoire? Why did Papa George get so upset when he saw them?"
"Can't you see the damage that's already been done, Isabel? Papa George is developing a fever. Who knows how long it's going to last? There's nothing more to say. You stole my key. You broke into my armoire. You're as bad as this thief here. I don't want you two to see each other again. Do you hear me? You can stay here till the morning, Hugo. I'll call a doctor to look at you and Isabel and George,
and then I want you gone."
She ripped up some strips of fabric and made makeshift bandages for Hugo's hand and Isabel's foot. She wrapped them as tightly as she could.
"I'm sorry, Mama Jean. Please don't be mad. We just wanted to..."
"Hush. It's bedtime. Hugo, there is the couch. Come, Isabel, I'll help you to your room."
But Hugo didn't sleep on the couch. A plan formed in his mind, and as soon as Isabel and her godmother had left the room and gone to sleep, he tiptoed over to the coat hooks by the door. The old man's coat was hanging there, and Hugo fished in his pockets. He heard a jangling sound and found what he was looking for. He took the ring of keys, left the house, and walked back to the train station in the dark. Hugo headed straight for the shuttered toy booth. He made sure no one was around, and then he tried all the keys on the key ring until he found the one that opened the booth. He stepped inside and began going through the boxes, opening drawers and flipping through papers the old man kept back there. But there were no clues. Hugo had been hoping that perhaps there might be some scrap of paper to help him figure out what it was the old woman was keeping secret, something in the booth he had never noticed before. Hugo did find one curious item, though, wrapped in a piece of fabric at the very back of a drawer. Hugo didn't know why the old man had kept the blue mouse. He had always assumed the toy had been sold a long time ago. Hugo liked that he had kept it, though. He found himself smiling as he turned the blue mouse over in his hands. Hugo thought about the little mechanical parts inside the mouse, as well as the other toys that he had stolen and used to fix the automaton. He had never really stopped to consider why the pieces from the old man's toys fit so well into the mechanical man. Hugo wrapped up the mouse and returned it to the drawer. As he turned to leave, he saw one of Isabel's books tucked into a corner of the booth. That gave him an idea. Hugo returned to his room and was relieved to see the mechanical man still sitting in the center of the floor. He managed to drag it back to its hiding place, grimacing in pain the whole time. He wrapped it up once again in the old piece of fabric and covered the hiding place with boxes. When he finished, he glanced over at the shelf with his bucket of tools, and his heart pounded. He hadn't realized until this moment the trouble he was in. It was his right hand that had been injured, and there was no way he could take proper care of the clocks without it. Soon, they would begin breaking down, and the station inspector would investigate, and it would all be over. Hugo lay down on his bed and rested his bandaged hand on his chest. Images flashed across his mind. Hugo saw the white, crooked fingers of the station inspector reaching for him. They turned into long, ragged claws and grabbed him violently by the arm. Hugo woke up, screaming. He hadn't even realized he had fallen asleep. Morning finally came, and Hugo gathered up his tools and tried to do his morning rounds. Eyes closed, head tilted to the side, he listened to the clocks. But without the use of both hands, he could barely wind them, and so he oiled and observed as much as possible, and anxiously compared the clocks with his railroad watch. Time was running out. As soon as he saw Monsieur Labisse open his shop, Hugo ran over. Monsieur Labisse was still removing his coat when he turned and saw Hugo.
"You're Isabel's friend, aren't you? What happened to your hand?"
Hugo moved his hand behind his back.
"I need to ask you a question, sir. I need to find out information about something. Do you have any books about the movies?"
"I might."
"What about the very first movies?" "My father saw a movie when he was little that he always remembered. It had a rocket going into the eye of the man in the moon."
Hugo thought the movie would be a good place to begin his search for clues.
"That sounds intriguing," Monsieur Labisse said as he straightened his tie and stood up. "Come, young man."
Hugo followed him to the shelf and waited while he looked through the books. He pulled out several volumes, glanced in the tables of contents, then closed the books and put them back.
"No, No, nothing about very early movies, I'm sorry.
Hugo thanked him and headed out the door. Where could he turn next? The bookstore had been his big inspiration.
You might have more luck at the Film Academy library, said Monsieur Labisse.
Hugo spun around.
Where's that?
Monsieur Labisse gave Hugo directions, and Hugo thanked him and ran out of the shop. Chapter 4. The Invention of Dreams. Hugo was still nervous about leaving the station, but he took a deep breath and headed downstairs to the vast subway system that snaked beneath the city like hidden rivers. Hugo entered the lobby of the French Film Academy, where a small woman sat at a big desk. He asked to use the library, and after looking him up and down in a disapproving manner, she said, No.
No?
You're too small and too dirty, and you must be accompanied by an adult, she said. Goodbye. Hugo just looked at her. He glanced at his hands and his clothes, and realized that he hadn't thought about the way he looked in a long time. Hugo knew the woman was being unfair, but he didn't know what to do about it. He was trying to figure out what to say when he thought he heard his name being called.
Hugo? Is that you?
Etienne!
Hugo ran to him.
What are you doing here?
I was just about to ask you the same thing.
The small woman at the desk looked at Etienne and said, You know this filthy child.
Madame Maurier... This is my friend, Hugo.
She pushed her black-rimmed glasses to the top of her nose and answered the phone, which had just rung.
Sorry about your job at the movie theater, Hugo said. It worked out well, actually. When I was fired, I had just started classes here, and they were able to give me some work in the offices. I'm studying to be a cameraman.
Hugo glanced at Etienne's eye patch, and Etienne smiled.
Having an eye patch actually makes it easier to look through a camera. I don't have to close one eye like everyone else.
Etienne tapped his eye patch and said,
Now tell me, what in the world brings you here? I need to find something in the library. Can you help me?
Follow me, said Etienne.
Hugo didn't look at Madame Maurier, but he was very happy to walk by her as they headed to the library. The library was on the second floor. It was clean and orderly, with rows of perfectly placed shelves which seemed untouchable. In the center of the room was a large painting of a man with fire in one hand and a beam of light projecting from his other hand. The painting caught Hugo's eye.
He didn't know what it meant, but he liked it.
Etienne helped Hugo navigate the card catalog so he could find the book he needed and then brought him to the correct shelf. Etienne stood on his toes, pulled the book off the shelf, and handed it to Hugo, who sat right where he was and opened it.
Etienne sat down next to him.
You know, one of my teachers wrote that book. Will you tell me what you need it for now?
But Hugo couldn't talk. The book was called The Invention of Dreams, the story of the first movies ever made. It was written by René Tabard a year earlier, in 1930. Hugo opened to the beginning of the book and read,
In 1895... One of the very first films ever shown was called A Train Arrives in the Station, which was nothing more than what the title suggests, a train coming into a station. But when the train came speeding toward the screen, the audience screamed and fainted because they thought they were in danger of being run over.
No one had ever seen anything like it before.
Hugo flipped through the pages of the book. There were images of men playing cards, people leaving a factory, each one a still from an early movie. Hugo continued turning the pages, and then he saw what he had been hoping to find. The rocket in the eye of the man in the moon. His father's favorite movie was called A Trip to the Moon.
The filmmaker, Georges Méliès, began his career as a magician, and he owned a theater of magic in Paris. This connection with magic helped him immediately understand what the new medium of film was capable of. He was among the first to demonstrate that film didn't have to reflect real life. He quickly realized that film had the power to capture dreams. Méliès is widely credited with perfecting the substitution trick, which made it possible for things to appear and disappear on screen as if by magic. This changed the face of movies forever. A Trip to the Moon, Méliès's most famous film, followed a group of explorers as they went to the moon, fought the moon men, and returned home with a captive to great acclaim. If one day far in the future mankind is really able to fly to the moon, we will have Georges Méliès and the movies to thank for helping us understand that if our dreams are big enough, anything is possible. Unfortunately, Georges Méliès died sometime after the Great War, and many, if not all, of his films are lost.
Died? He's not dead, Hugo said out loud.
Who isn't dead? Said Etienne, who had been reading over Hugo's shoulder.
Georges Méliès. He runs a toy booth in the train station.
Etienne laughed.
I'm not kidding, Hugo said. And he's Isabel's godfather.
Chapter 5. Papa George Made Movies. Later that day, Hugo returned to his room with the book from the library on